ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா. So now we will begin the fourth canto. So the prominent theme in the fourth canto is Visarga, the sub-creation, secondary creation. So the prominent episodes in the fourth canto are this episode of Daksha, Sati and Shiva, then Dhruva Maharaj, then Anga Maharaj and Vena, then next Prithu Maharaj, then Prachina Barhi and Prachetas. These are the prominent episodes. It's more like a storyline, not much technical aspects are there. So the second canto and the beginning, the first half of third canto are filled with lot of technical details about creation. But fourth canto is more on the pastimes and prayers. So we have seen this slide of Akuti, Devahuti, Prasuti, the daughters of Swayambhu Manu. So we have discussed the descendants of Devahuti, right? Only one. That is Kapila Deva and his activities and his teachings we have discussed. Then Devahuti had 9 daughters also. And Akuti and Prasuti also had their descendants. So these 3 daughters' descendants will be discussed in the first chapter of this canto. So this is the genealogical line of Devahuti. So Devahuti was married Kardama, and then as we discussed, she had 9 daughters and 1 son Kapila. So Kapila's activities we have already discussed. And the 9 daughters are married to these 9 sages. Kala married Marichi, then Anasuya married Atri, Shraddha married Angira, so and they gave birth to various sons and sages and others. So this Anasuya and Atri, their marriage and their descendants are described little more elaborately. So this Atri and Anasuya performed so many austerities. Atri's desire was that he wanted son as good as the Supreme Lord. But he didn't know who is that Supreme Lord. So he said, he was meditating on some Supreme Lord within the universe, you become my son, like that. He was not very sure who is that. Then after the end of his austerities, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, all 3 came to Atri and said, you called for us. Then Atri said, I called only for one. How come 3 of you came? Who is the Supreme Lord? Then all 3 of other Supreme Lords within this universe. Right, that's why all 3 of us came. So their amshas, their partial expansions are these 3. Dattatreya, Soma and Durvasa. Durvasa was the partial expansion of Shiva, then Soma from Brahma and Dattatreya from Vishnu. He is called Datta Atreya because Datta, he gave himself to Atri. Datta Atreya. That's why he is called Datta Atreya. So then the descendants of Prasuti are described next. Those are the descendants of Devahuti. Now this is Prasuti. So Prasuti and married Daksha and they had 16 daughters. So first 13 daughters were given to Dharma. So one of them, Murti, gave birth to Narayan Narayana. So where there is a little description about the birth of Naranarayan Rishis and how demigods celebrated when Naranarayan Rishis took birth from Dharma and Murti. Then Swaha was given to Agni and they had 3 sons. Swadha was given to Putris, they had 2 sons. So Sati was given to Shiva and she did not have a son. So then that created some doubt in the mind of Prasuti, in the mind of Vidura, who was hearing. Vidura asked, how come Sati did not have a child? Right? Then he said, because of some misunderstanding between Shiva and Daksha. Then he got a doubt. How can there be misunderstanding between Shiva and Daksha? Both were such exalted people. Daksha is expert, Prajapati. That's why he is called Daksha. Then Shiva is Silavatam Shrestha, very best person in character. But how come there was a tension between both of them that led to the death of Sati, immaturely, before she gave any birth to a child only? Then this entire episode comes up where Daksha enters the assembly, where so many Prajapatis and so many exalted sages were there, assembled together to perform some sacrifice. Daksha enters that assembly. Everyone stood to respect Brahma, respect Daksha. Then Brahma and Shiva did not stand up. Then Daksha offered respects to Brahmaji and then criticized Shiva. This monkey-eyed person, so he married my beautiful daughter and he is not offering respects to me. By accepting my daughter and becoming my son-in-law, right, he has accepted me as a superior. Father-in-law is supposed to be superior to son-in-law. So he has accepted me as a superior, but he's not offering respect. So like that, he criticized Shiva in various ways and cursed him. May Shiva not have any share in sacrificial arena. So he should not have any share. And he just left. And all the residents of that assembly, they were controlling Daksha. They were requesting Daksha. So please don't leave like that. But Daksha did not hear. He angrily left. Then there were exchanges of curses and counter curses between Bhrigu and Nandi. So they all become agitated. Right? Then Shiva was little disgusted with the entire scene that is happening. And he silently left that sacrificial arena. Then Daksha planned for another sacrifice, right? And for that sacrifice, he did not invite Shiva and Sati. He did not invite his dear daughter Sati. He did not invite the prominent demigod Shiva also. And he was doing his sacrifice. And Sati was hearing about all the discussions about that sacrifice from here and there. And all the other people were going towards that sacrifice. And then she also developed a desire to go for that sacrifice. Then she requested Shiva, "Shiva, can I go for that sacrifice?" Then Shiva said, "Your father was inimical towards me. He would not be welcoming you nicely. And if you are not received properly from your father, that would be disappointing to you. That might even cause your death also. So my suggestion to you is, don't go." Then Sati says, there was a lot of discussion. Oh, you could have stood up. If you had stood up that day, then nothing could have happened like this. This one small thing, you could not have done it. Right? Why can't you offer respects? Then Shiva says, I was meditating on the super soul, sitting in the sacrificial arena. Right? One who offers respects to the super soul within the heart, he need not offer respects to anyone. And even if one physically offers respects to other people, he's offering respects to the super soul in that person's body only. So, like that. Then Sati says, even if we are not invited also, we can go. Because it is father's house only. You can go to a father's house or friend's house or relative's house without invitation also. Then Shiva says, yes, we can go without invitation also. But if the guest, if the host is inimical and then glances at you with angry eyes to burn you, so such kind of person's house should not be visited, even if he is a relative. So like that, there was a lot of argument. Then Sati was in two minds, whether to go or not. And then she was walking, right, very briskly. And then she was, in the meanwhile, she was glancing at Shiva also as if to burn him. So like that. So then Sati finally decided that I have to go. Then Shiva indicated. Understanding the desire of Shiva, all his attendants, all this Pramathagana and all of them, so they followed their master's mood and then they accompanied Mother Sati to Daksha's sacrificial arena, right? So all of them were protection for Mother Sati. Then Sati went to Daksha's house and Daksha did not speak a single word. And all the other ladies came, mother and sisters came, received Sati nicely and offered her presentations, offered her a place to sit also. But Sati was not happy with that reception. She felt that my father did not look at me. He was not welcoming. There were no oblations in the name of Shiva in the sacrifice. Then she became very upset. And then she ridiculed Daksha. That who else other than you can hate Shiva? Shiva is such an exalted personality. Right? Someone who offends a Vaishnava has to meet destruction. Even if the Vaishnava forgives him also, the dust of the lotus feet of that Vaishnava cannot forgive that offender. So you will be subjected to destruction. And I am feeling so ashamed that I am connected with you. This body is a product of you. Right? I am feeling so ashamed, I cannot live in this body anymore. Being in this body is such a shame for me, I will give up this body. And she invoked fire element within her body and then she self-immolated her and then she was burnt. Then Daksha did not speak a single word. The whole scene is happening and everybody was criticizing Daksha. So because of this hard-hearted Daksha only, Sati left her body. And this whole thing was communicated by Narada Muni to Shiva. Then Shiva became very angry. He took some hairs and then created Veerabhadra and ordered him, go and destroy the Akshara sacrifice and kill that fellow also. Then Veerabhadra went and then beheaded Shiva, beheaded Daksha, and then created a lot of destruction. Then the sacrifice was stopped. Sacrifice is meant to cause pleasure to Vishnu and then meant to create welfare for all the living entities. But that was stopped now because of Shiva's anger and Daksha's mistake primarily. Then all the demigods and sages went to Brahmaji. And Brahmaji said, because you have offended such great personality Shiva, we are supposed to have this kind of situation only. What else do you expect? But still, I will go and pacify him. Then Brahmaji comes and then pacifies Shiva. And then Shiva was sitting in the assembly of so many great sages and then discussing Krishna Katha. So Brahmaji comes and then pacifies. So finally Shiva agrees. He became kind. And then let there be goat head for Daksha. Then Daksha was given a goat head. And still Daksha was not very... Daksha felt regretful and then remorse. But still the traces of his offense towards Lord Shiva were still there. So later he offends Narada Muni also in the sixth canto. That we will discuss when we come there. Then after getting a goat head, Daksha continues sacrifice. And then Lord Vishnu comes there in the sacrifice. And Vishnu says, understand that myself and Shiva and Brahma, we are all non-different. Non-different in the sense that our purpose is non-different. We are all working for the welfare of this universe only. Right? We are in charges of different aspects of this universe and then we are taking care of that. So understand the non-difference between them and then respect everyone. So like that he gives a talk to Daksha, and all the residents, all the participants of that sacrifice offer various prayers to Lord Vishnu, and then Vishnu departs. And later Sati was reborn as Parvati, as the son of Himalayas and Menaka, and then again she married Shiva only in her next life also. So by hearing this whole episode of Daksha Yajna and Sati's self-emulation and then reattaining Shiva, so that will destroy one's sins. So this is the Phalashruti he gives. So that is how Maitreya Muni narrated the descendants of Akuti, Prasuti and Devahuti. Right? As a part of that, Prasuti's descendants, right, Sati's description came, and for six chapters he elaborated on that incident. Basically what is going on now is the descendants of Akuti, Prasuti, Devahuti and Swayambhu Manu's the descendants of Swayambhu Manu. That's what is going on now. Then so far we have discussed the lineages of Manus and their daughters, and lineages from Brahma's sons who married to them. And now Brahmaji's remaining sons are also described now. So now Swayambhu Manu's daughters and their descendants are described, and as a part of that, some of the sons of Brahma who got married to this Swayambhu Manu's daughters, so their descendants are also described. So before entering into the description of the sons of Swayambhu Manu, Maitreya Muni briefly describes about the remaining sons of Brahmaji. Right? So Brahmaji has another son, that is irreligion, Adharma. So Adharma married Mrsha, or falsity. So that is his own sister. So from their combination came Dambha and Maya, bluffing and cheating. They are also brother and sister, but they married each other. Right? And then this whole Adharma lineage, the illicit connection between brother and sister is originating from the lineage of Adharma. That is Adharma. So like that, greed, nirukti, then krodha, himsa, kali, durukti. Durukti is harsh speech. This durukti is represented by suruchi. That is coming up next. Then mrityu, bhiti, yatana, niraya. So all these are the descendants of Adharma, one of the sons of Brahmaji. By hearing this description three times, one will attain piety. Because by hearing this disgusting description of the lineage of Adharma, one will be disinclined to perform any adharma. That is how he gains piety. That is how his sinful contamination of the soul will be washed. Then Swayambhu Manu's dynasty will continue. So three daughters are done. Now we will begin with Uttanapada. So actually Priyavrata is supposed to be discussed first because he is elderly son. But Uttanapada, he begins with Uttanapada. Because Uttanapada's son is Dhruva. After discussing so much of impious activities of Adharma, then Maitreya Muni felt the impetus to describe some pious activities immediately. And Dhruva is the most pious king. So he began with Dhruva Maharaj's episode. So Dhruva Maharaj was the son of Uttanapada. So Uttanapada had two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. So Suniti was very, as her name suggests, Suniti was very respectful and gentle, and she had beautiful qualities, wonderful qualities. And Suruchi was little proud and haughty. So once Suruchi's son, Uttama, was sitting on the lap of Uttanapada. Then Dhruva Maharaj, son of Suniti, he came running. He also wanted to get on father's lap. Then Suruchi chastised, "How dare you sit on your father's lap? Right? If you want to sit on your father's lap, you have to die, right? You have to perform some austerities to please Vishnu and get a benediction from him and enter my womb. You have to die and enter my womb. Then once you become my son, then you can sit on your father's lap. You cannot sit now. Because you are a small child, you cannot understand the discrimination between me and your mother. Right? I am the favorite wife of your father, so you cannot sit." Then Uttanapada was seeing the whole scene and he did not speak a single word. Right? So Dhruva Maharaj felt very unhappy. He was just a 5-year-old child. He went to his mother, Suniti. Then first word Suniti says is, "My dear son Dhruva, never contemplate on any harm towards anyone who has hurted you. Right? You must be hurt by someone, but you should not develop any ill feelings or negative feelings or desire any harm for them. Because whoever suffers because of his previous activities only. Right? That is only coming back to him. So you should not unnecessarily contemplate on harming others. So what I would suggest is, what actually your stepmother told is true. Your father doesn't even consider me as a maid servant also. What to speak of his queen? Right? Because you are the son of such a neglected wife, so we are getting this treatment. But if you desire to sit on your father's lap, only Krishna can help you. Because as a mother, I can give you some affection. But Krishna can give you affection of millions of mothers put together. So, tameva vatsashraya bhritya vatsalam mumukshubhir mrugya padabhya paddhatim ananya bhave nijadharma bhavite manasya vasthapya bhajasva purusham. Ashraya bhritya vatsalam. That Lord is very affectionate to his dear devotees. So, you should go and take shelter. Your father Manu, your grandfather Manu, attained success only by worshipping Vishnu. Attained material success and spiritual success also. And your great-grandfather, Brahmaji, he was able to create this universe only by meditation on Lord Vishnu. Because your previous forefathers have benefited by worshipping Vishnu, you should also worship Vishnu. Only he can fulfill your desire. Then Dhruva gets very inspired by this lecture by his mother, and then he leaves home. Right? And whenever a sincere devotee is going and searching for the Supreme Lord understands, oh, this person is sincere and he needs help. So the Lord inspired Narada Muni to go and meet Dhruva. Narada Muni comes and tests Dhruva Maharaj's determination. "Oh, my dear boy, you are just a small child. You should not be bothered by honor and dishonor. Right? So you are just attached to playing. Don't unnecessarily come like this. And if you are so mature that even at this age you can understand the difference between honor and dishonor, then hear this also. One gets honor or dishonor because of his previous karma. If he can understand the meaning of honor and dishonor, he can also understand the law of karma also. Right? So you will be that intelligent, you are that mature now. Understand this and then go back. Intelligent people will always be satisfied. They will not be dissatisfied in any context. Right? So they will treat every incident that is happening in their life as Lord's mercy, ordained by the Lord only. Daivopasaditam. Then Dhruva Maharaj says, "Oh, your instructions are very wonderful, but they are meant for Brahmanas. I am a Kshatriya. How can I follow your instructions?" So my ambition is to get the most exalted position in the three worlds, which my father or great grandfather also did not get. Please, honestly show me a path to attain this goal. Then Narada Muni smiled and said, oh, fine. Earlier he said, whatever process your mother said was not practical for you now. You are a small child. Once you are grown up, you come back. Now he says, whatever your mother said is correct. Right? Worship the Supreme Lord. I will tell you the process of worshipping the Supreme Lord. Then he gave him a combination of little Ashtanga Yoga, little deity worship, little mantra meditation. Right? And then he gave a package to Dhruva Maharaj. You start austerities. Go to Madhuvan. Then he went to Madhuvan. Then when Dhruva Maharaj went to Madhuvan, then Narada Muni came to Uttanapad. Then he asked, Uttanapad, you are looking morose. What happened to you? Right? Looks like there is some problem in your house. You are looking very morose. Are you, this dharma, artha, kama are being properly followed in your kingdom? He didn't inquire about moksha. Because someone who is so much involved in political affairs will not generally think about moksha. So he did not ask. Then Uttanapada spoke his regretful words. So I have neglected my son. I have neglected my wife. I have disrespected them. I have practically banished them. Right? He was out of affection. My son was coming on my lap, but I was not welcoming him. So actually, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj says, all our practice of sadhana and hearing, chanting and devotional practices should lead us to a point where we act appropriately at the spur of the moment. Uttanapada was, it's not that he did not love Dhruva Maharaj. He had a lot of affection for Dhruva Maharaj. And now he's regretting so much. By his regret, we can understand how much he loves Dhruva Maharaj. But at that point, in front of Suruchi, he could not act properly. Right? But what was needed is his proper action at that point. Right? So Dhruva Maharaj, Uttanapada Maharaj is regretting now. Then Narada Muni says, your son will perform most wonderful activities which were not performed by anyone. Right? So that is Sudushkaram Karma Krute. Sudushkaram, most difficult task is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and your son will please Supreme Lord. And he will be very famous, and you will also be glorified because of his being, because of your being his father. He will come back in few months only, becoming very famous. Just wait. Then Uttanapad always thought about his son only. Then Dhruva Maharaj did austerities. So first month, he was sustaining only on some roots and other things. Then like that, his austerities, the temperature of his austerities increased. Right? And at one point, he was totally in the sixth month. After fifth month, he started meditating on the Supreme Lord. And his body weight has become so heavy that he was able to push down the earth. And he blocked his life airs. Then, because he blocked his life airs, the entire universe got suffocated. And all the universal demigods, they went and prayed to Vishnu. What happened? Why we are getting suffocated? Then he said, it is the result of my devotee, dear devotee, Dhruva Maharaj's austerities. 5-year-old boy is performing some austerities in Madhuvan, and we are experiencing this suffocation. So Prabhupada gives that example. When one is going in airplane, as an individual unit, he can walk or do something at certain pace. But because he is sitting in the airplane, which is traveling thousands of miles per hour, he is also traveling thousands of miles per hour. So Dhruva Maharaj, his weight may be whatever, few kilograms only, but he became as heavy as the universe, and then entire universe weight came in him, and he was pushing down the universe because he was meditating on the Supreme Lord. He became practically one with the Supreme Whole. That's why he was able to create that kind of transformation within the entire universe. So the Lord reassures his demigods and then goes to give darshan to Dhruva Maharaj. Then he goes in front of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was meditating on the Lord. He was seeing the form of the Lord, which Narada Muni described, Tarunam Ramaniyangam Arunoshthe Kshanadharam Pranatasrayanam Ramnam Saranyam Karunaranam. Like that, Lord's form is very wonderfully described by Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was meditating on that form. Suddenly he lost the vision. Then he opened his eyes. Where did that form go? And that form is right standing in front of the Lord on, in front of Dhruva Maharaj. So at he suddenly got very astonished, surprised, and he wanted to offer heartfelt prayers to the Lord. But nothing came out of his mouth. Right? Understanding the embarrassing and awkward position of Dhruva Maharaj, the Lord touched his conch shell on his head. Then Dhruva Maharaj, all his senses got enlivened. Yeah, what is that? Yontah pravishya mama vacha mimam prasuptam sanjeevayati akhila shakti dharasvadhamnam. Right? So you have entered all my senses and enlivened them spiritually so that I am able to offer my prayers to you. I am able to engage all my senses in your service, especially my power of speech. Like that. Then he offers several prayers. One of these is Yanirvatastanubhratam tava pada padma dhyanat bhavajana katha sravanena vasyat sa brahmanistam ahumanya pinatam abhut kim tvantakasi lulitam lulitat patatam vimanat. So what is the use of entering the heavenly planets or even getting a liberation? If happiness has to be attained, there are only two means. Tava pada padma dhyanat, by meditating on your lotus feet. Then bhavajana katha sravanena vasyat, by hearing the descriptions about your lordship from your devotees. That is where I get pleasure, not by entering heaven and getting liberation. So like that he offers various prayers, and Lord also gives him Dhruva Loka. Then Dhruva Maharaj was regretting, why did I ask for this? Well, after he got the vision of the Lord, then Dhruva Maharaj was not in a mood to fulfill his ambitious goal. Before performing austerities, he had some material ambition. All that got transformed after seeing the darshan of the Lord. He was feeling that, why did I ask for this kind of benediction? Still the Lord gave me. Right? He was regretting. Then slowly, he was coming towards the kingdom, and then somebody informed Uttanapada that your son is coming. So the union happened. The family union happened. Then Suruchi also felt very happy to see Dhruva Maharaj successfully coming back. She also embraced Dhruva Maharaj and then gave blessings to Dhruva Maharaj. May you live long. So, and Lord also predicted, your brother Uttama will die because of being killed by an yaksha, and your mother searching for him, she will also die in a forest fire. Stepmother, Suruchi. Same thing happened. Then Dhruva Maharaj, he felt very affectionate towards his brother Uttama, and then he went to Alakapuri, right, yaksha's place, and then started fighting with the yakshas, right? And before this, Uttanapada gets retired. Once Dhruva Maharaj was able to manage his kingdom, Uttanapada gets retired. Then Dhruva Maharaj marries, and then death of Uttama and Suruchi happens, and he goes to Alakapuri and then fights with the yakshas. And at one point, he was just completely destroying the entire race of yakshas. Then Manu comes and then says, pacifies him. You should not be doing like this. For one mistake of one yaksha, you are killing so many yakshas, it's not good. Go and please Kuvera. And then Kuvera comes and then gives benediction that Dhruva Maharaj can, you can have a remembrance of the Lord. So like that, there are so many details. Then eventually Dhruva Maharaj also retires from his kingdom and then goes and performs austerities. Then at one point, after ruling 36,000 years, then Dhruva Maharaj was given this airplane. Right? Airplane comes from Vaikuntha to take him to the abode of the Lord, Dhruva Loka. Then Dhruva Maharaj thinks, how can I go back to the spiritual world, or how can I go back to Dhruva Loka without my mother? My mother inspired me to perform this devotional service. Without my mother's good instruction when I was 5 years old, I would not have attained this. So 36,000 years back, Dhruva Maharaj got some instruction from his mother, and he's very grateful for it now. Then before he could even think like that, the son Nanda and Sunanda, the Vaikuntha residents, so they showed Dhruva Maharaj, see another airplane. That airplane is taking your mother to the spiritual world, Lord's abode. Then Dhruva Maharaj felt satisfied. So after Dhruva Maharaj's departure, Narada Muni, there's a description. Maitreya says, Narada Muni glorified about Dhruva in Pracheta sacrifice. Right? Dhruva is so glorious. Then Vajra says, who are these Prachetas? How come Narada Muni glorified Dhruva in Pracheta sacrifice? Then this whole, who are Prachetas? Basically, they are descendants of Dhruva Maharaj only. So Narada Muni, Maitreya Muni continues the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj. So in the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj, Anga Maharaj comes, right? And Anga Maharaj is a very pious king. He is a very devoted person. So he was doing a sacrifice, and because he did not have a son, demigods were not accepting that sacrifice. And the sages have done some sacrifice so that Anga Maharaj can get a son. So Anga Maharaj's son is Vena. And Anga Maharaj's wife is Sunitha. And she is the daughter of irreligion, right? Death. Daughter of death. So she was not the right candidate to accept that sacrificial, that whatever pious and sweet race that comes. So, but still Anga Maharaj, being a liberal king, gave that to his wife. And then she gave birth to Vena. So Vena was, he inculcated the qualities of his grandfather, death personified, and he became a very cruel personality. Anga Maharaj has done so many things to rectify the character of Vena, but he couldn't do so. So suddenly in one night, Anga Maharaj just left the kingdom. He got disgusted. He felt that having a bad son is actually very good. He can give us the feelings of detachment. So he got detached and then he left. Then Vena was enthroned by the sages. And Vena was not ruling properly. He was a bad king. He was very cruel. So sages who enthroned him actually dethroned him and killed him also, because he was a bad king. He was saying that you people are like unchaste people. You are in my kingdom. You are supposed to worship me as the supreme lord, and you are worshipping some other Vishnu or someone. What is that? Then sages tell that this fellow has gone crazy. So he cannot be king anymore. So they killed him. And they observed that a kingless kingdom will be in chaos, because thieves and rogues will torment the citizens. So although Vena was killed by the sages, his mother Sunitha preserved his dead body. So sages requested mother Sunitha to get the dead body, and they churned the thighs of Vena and produced one personality called Nishadha or Bahuka. Right, Bahuka, who is actually the personification of the contamination in Vena. So Vena's body was a combination of was the result of Sunitha and Anga. Anga is very good. Sunitha is bad. So the contaminated part of Vena's body, which is resulting from Sunitha, was removed in the form of Bahuka, and the glorious part of his body, which is coming from Anga Maharaj, so that part gave birth to Prithu Maharaj. So they churned the arms of Vena and produced Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj and Archi, a couple manifested. So he is a Shaktyavesha incarnation of the Lord. And when Prithu Maharaj came, all the demigods offered various presentations, and all the bards glorified him nicely. And because Vena and this kind of kings were ruling Mother Earth retracted all the resources within her, right? And all the citizens were suffering. They went and complained to Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj, we don't have food to eat. We don't have grains. Then Prithu Maharaj contemplated and felt that, oh, this is the work of earth. So he got on his chariot and then chased earth. Earth took the form of a cow to invoke compassion of Prithu Maharaj, and then she started running away. And there was conversation that because unscrupulous people are exploiting me, I have withdrawn all my resources. Right? I will tell you the path to retrieve all the resources and then have welfare for your citizens. Right? So then Prithu Maharaj liked this idea, and then making earth as a cow and making Swayambhu, Manu and so many other sages as calves, he extracted so many resources from Mother Earth and then took care of his citizens nicely. So once this, and he also made earth flat, and he created villages and towns, right? That was all Prithu Maharaj's contribution. So once he was performing a sacrifice, 100 Aswamedhas, then 99 Aswamedhas happened, and in the 100th sacrifice, Indra came and stole the horse. Then Prithu Maharaj had sent his son, Vijitasva, right? So Vijitasva just got the horse back, but Indra, who was taking the form of some bogus sadhus, so he was running away, and every time he's taking a different form, he's creating some pseudo-religion, right? So at one point Prithu Maharaj became so angry, and then he himself took his bow to kill. Then the Brahmana said, "Oh, you are the person who is conducting the sacrifice. How can you kill someone? You don't do anything. We will chant some mantra so that Indra will fall down. Indra will be killed." Then Brahmaji manifests there. Brahmaji says, "Don't kill Indra." See, he is so obsessed with stopping the sacrifice of Prithu Maharaj. So let Prithu Maharaj perform only 99 sacrifice. No need of 100 sacrifice. Right? So let Indra hold the post of being Satakratu. So Prithu Maharaj said, "Okay, whatever my authority is saying, I will follow." So he gave up his ambition. He sacrificed his ambition to perform the 100th sacrifice. That is the 100th sacrifice he has done, sacrificing his personal ambition. So Brahmaji was pleased, and because he followed Brahmaji's words, Lord was pleased, and Lord personally descended in the sacrifice of Prithu Maharaj. And Prithu Maharaj offered so many beautiful prayers. Varan vibhota dvaradeshwarad buddha katham vrinite gunavakriyatmanam ye narakanam apisanti dehinam tanisha kaivalyapate vrinenacha. Then nakama yenatha tadapyaham kuchin sautama shloka mahanmukhachito. He offers beautiful prayers. The essence of that is, I don't want the results of karma process which is attaining heavenly planets. I don't want liberation. I just want millions of years to hear Krishna katha from your devotees. Because if whatever a devotee speaks, because devotee carries the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord within his heart, the saffron dust particles of the lotus feet of the Lord will emanate from the mouth of a pure devotee. And what is the effect of that? Smritim punar vismrita tattva vartmanam kuyoginam no vitaratyalam varehi. They will revive the remembrance of one's constitutional position as eternal servant of Krishna. That is why when one hears from a pure devotee, the remembrance of one's constitutional position will be revived, and he will be reinstated in as a servant of Krishna. So he asks for millions of years to hear from pure devotees. So Lord instructs Prithu Maharaj, and then he leaves. Then Prithu Maharaj once assembles in a place, and he after the sacrificial area, coming out of the sacrificial arena, so he addresses his citizens. That is also elaborate instructions of Prithu Maharaj to his citizens. Then as predicted by the Lord, all the four Kumaras come and give association to Prithu Maharaj. Then Prithu Maharaj receives them nicely and then says, "Whatever the kingdom we have is Sadhu Uchishta. You have given us this kingdom. Whenever a Brahmana comes, the king surrenders entire kingdom to the Brahmanas. And Brahmana says, what we will do with this kingdom? We are giving it back to you. You only rule." That is how kingdom of a king is Sadhu Uchishta. Like that. So like that, Prithu Maharaj glorifies all these four Kumaras, and then four Kumaras also give teachings about bhakti. The beautiful verses like Yatpada Pankaja Palasa Vilasa Bhaktya Karmashayam Grithitam Udgrathayanti Santa Tadvanna Rikta Matayo Yatayo Virudha Sroto Ganastamaranam Bhajavasudevam. So all these beautiful verses come in this section only. Yei Ridrishi Bhagavato Gatiratmavada. Oh, it's there here. All these verses come in this beautiful chapter. And eventually Prithu Maharaj takes up to this Vanaprastha life, and Prithu and Archi, they would go back to Godhead. Right? So Prithu Maharaj in his yogic trance, he leaves his body, and Archi was alone. Then Archi takes bath and then performs final rites of Prithu Maharaj and enters that fire. Right? And Archi also goes back. So all the heavenly denizens were glorifying Mother Archi in so many ways. Right? An ordinary, you know, this world may think that, "Oh, Archi, poor lady, so she lost her husband and then she committed suicide." They may say like that. But we can see the heavenly denizens. See here. All the heavenly denizens were very nicely appreciating Mother Archi, that she served her husband so nicely. She's a great devotee. And now she's going back to Godhead, following the path of her husband. So they glorified. Then Prithu Maharaj's son is Vijitasva, right? His son is Havirdhana, and his son is Prachinabarhi, and his sons are Prachetas. So Prachinabarhi, he was addicted to sacrifices, right? He grew kusha grasses all over his kingdom, right? So that he can perform sacrifices. That's why he's called Prachina Barhi. So he sends for Prachetas. He instructed Prachetas, you go and perform austerities. Right? So before you take up the charge of the kingdom, you should perform austerities. That is the Vedic culture. So they go. And when they go, then Lord Shiva comes. Right? Shiva comes and then speaks this Rudra Gita. Rudra Gitam. Because when someone is devoted to Lord Vasudeva, all demigods would come and assist him. Shiva is more pleased with the devotees of Lord Vasudeva than his own devotees. Most of the times his own devotees trouble him or bother him. Right? They just take some flesh and then put in the sacrifice. They do all kinds of crazy worships. Then finally Shiva is obliged to come there and then say, stop this nonsense. What do you want? I want the Shakti that if I put my hand on someone's head, he has to be burned to ashes. Then, okay, okay, take it. Then he starts running behind Shiva only. So most of these Shiva's devotees are like that. Many of them. But yah param brahmasasaksha triguna jiva samgitat bhagavantam vasudevam same bhakta priyosime. So one who worships Lord Vasudeva is very dear to me, Shiva says in this episode only. So Prachetas were worshipping Shiva. So Shiva was very pleased with them. So as Prachetas were doing their austerities and chanting Rudra Gita taught by Lord Shiva, so Prachina Barhi was doing sacrifices in his kingdom. Then Narada Muni goes and meets him. And Narada Muni tells an allegorical story called Puranjan, which is basically the story of Prachina Barhi only. So after this, telling this elaborate Puranjan story for 5 chapters, then still Prachina Barhi couldn't understand. Who is this Puranjan? That is you only. That part he couldn't get. That didn't click. Then he tells another deer and a allegory. So in this Puranjan allegory, one episode comes. One description comes. How Puranjan goes for hunting. Right? This entire description of material body is given here. So Puranjan is going for hunting, sitting on a chariot, and the wheels are the moors, and all this description comes. This is actually the answer sheet of His Grace Radhesham Prabhu. So if you see in your handbooks, one question in 4.26 is that, just try to draw a chariot of Puranjan and depicts various parts of the chariot. So this is Radhesham Prabhu's drawing. In that half an hour exam, he drew this also. I didn't get any VBT painting or anything to put there. I just put Prabhuji's scanned answer sheet. So, yeah, Puranjan story is there. And then Puranjan becomes a woman in his next life. Right? And Avignata, the super soul, comes and gives teachings. So, this Vaidarbhi, Puranjan becomes Vaidarbhi in the next life. This there is a very exhaustive allegorical story. Then he gives a deer allegory. Then he directly explains the signs of transmigration of soul, which is going from one body to another body. So after all this, then Prachina Barhi got enlightened and he said, okay, I got the point. I will retire now. Before even my sons arrive also, I will retire. Oh ministers, you take care of the kingdom. Prachetas will come and take over the rule. So I am going. So Prachina Barhi went into renounced order of life. Then coming back to Prachetas, they chanted Rudra Gita for 10,000 years underwater. Then Lord came. Manifested in front of them. I am very pleased by your beautiful, friendly relationships, my dear Prachetas. So, there is one daughter of trees, Marisha. All of you should go and marry her. All 10 people got married to one girl only. So, you go and marry her. And then, I will bestow you physical strength and opulence. For that thousands of years you can nicely enjoy material opulence. At the same time, you are already spiritual devotees. All of you and your wife, Marisha, they are of one quality, you go and marry her. So this Marisha, actually she was the son of Apsara called Pramlocha and a Muni called Kandu. So after giving birth, Apsara just went back to heavenly planets and the trees took care of her. And the predominating deity of trees, Moon, came and put his finger in her mouth and then nourished her. So like that she was brought up by the trees. So then Prachetas came out of the water and they saw, you know, these trees growing like anything. And then they emanated fire from their mouth and then they wanted to burn all these trees. Because they were obstructing, right, the path to heavenly planets. Right, they grew so much. Then Brahmaji came and then pacified Prachetas, don't burn the trees. So marry the daughter of the trees, Marisha. So like that. Then Prachetas married the daughter of Prachetas, daughter of the trees. And after ruling kingdom for thousands of years, they renounced, they left the kingdom to their son Daksha. So the son of Prachetas is Daksha. So they left the kingdom there and then they came for austerities and Narada Muni came and then gave them teachings like that. So that is how this fourth canto ended. So at the end of fourth canto, Vidura was actually carefully hearing all these stories and then hearing that Narada Muni enlightened Prachinabarhi, right? Narada Muni directed Dhruva and Prachetas. He taught teachings to Prachetas. He inspired them to do devotional service. So Vidura also got a inspiration that he has to inspire Dhritarashtra. He was still rotting in Hastinapur. So he took leave from Maitreya and then he went back to Hastinapur. And 1.13, first canto 13 chapter happened after 4.31. So Bhagavatam is not so much chronological. So Vidura expresses gratitude and then he goes. So far we have discussed the descendants of Devahuti, Akuti and Prasuti and Uttanapada. Now Priyavrat is left. So we'll discuss Priyavrat also. So Canto 5 discusses the descendants of Priyavrat Maharaj and universe structure slightly. That is the second half. So now Priyavrata, then Parikshit Maharaj asks, why Priyavrata remained in household life? Then Priyavrata was actually a brahmachari getting trained under Narada Muni. Then Swayambhu Manu, he wanted to retire. He wants to give charge of the kingdom to some able king and then he wants to retire. But his son became a brahmachari. So Swayambhu Manu went and requested, right, Narada Muni, and requested Priyavrata Maharaj, so please take charge of the kingdom. Right, I want to retire. I want to take to devotional service. That is the eagerness of renunciation in all these Rajarshis. Then Priyavrata was unable to decide, should I accept my father's proposal and take kingdom or not? Right? Then Brahmaji came and then said, you must take charge of the kingdom. Right? So this is the Lord's order. So let Swayambhu Manu, take break. Right, from this kingly responsibilities and you take care. So there was a lot of discussion. We'll cut short on that. And then Priyavrata took charge of the kingdom. And then he created this seven islands and seven oceans, right, by becoming another sun. Right? He was not very happy with the sun's movements. So he became another, he took a chariot and then started, lighting up the other side of the universe, right, by going around the universe. And that's how he created seven ditches, the seven oceans and seven islands in this Bhumandala. Like that. See his capacity. So Swayambhu, Priyavrata's son, then slowly Priyavrata retired after this. Then Priyavrata's son is Agnidhra. And this Agnidhra, so he went to some place to perform some austerities, right? To go to Pitruloka. Then Brahmaji, understanding his desire, had sent a heavenly damsel called Purvachitti. And then they got married and then they produced children. And one of them is Nabhi. And Nabhi performed a sacrifice to get a son as good as the Supreme Lord. Then the Supreme Lord came and became Nabhi's son. He is Rishabhadev. So Rishabhadev had 100 sons. Right? He gave teachings to 100 sons. Very elaborate, philosophical and heavy teachings. Right, in 5.5. So this Rishabhadev had 100 sons. Out of them, 10 are Kshatriyas. And 9 are Paramahamsas, Navayogindras. And 81 are Brahmanas. Right? He is a king. All his sons are supposed to be Kshatriyas. But he has, three categories of sons within 100 sons. That shows that once Varna is decided according to one's qualities, not by his birth. Then Rishabhadev's activities are further described. After teaching to his sons at a place called Brahmavarta, I think, then he becomes an avadhut and then he travels everywhere and he gives up his body in a yogic method. He did not accept the mystic opulences also. Then his son, Bharat Maharaj, He renounces the kingdom and then he goes to perform austerities at Pulahashram, and then he gets affectionate towards a deer. Although he went to the stage of bhava, he became entangled by affection towards a deer, and then he becomes a deer in his next life, and eventually he becomes Jadabharat, right? And Jadabharat was about to be sacrificed by some dacoits, right? They had the Swavidhana. They created, they concocted their own way of sacrifice and wanted to kill Jadabharat. Then Kali, she could not tolerate this offense towards a devotee. She came out of the deity and then killed all these dacoits. This is another proof. All the demigods are more favorable towards Vaishnavas than their own devotees. Like that. Then Jadabharat, he was an exalted Paramahamsa, but externally he was appearing like a dumb man, dull man. So anybody will pick him up and then engage him in some service. Right? Somebody will put him as a in charge of field. Somebody will make him some physical services. Somebody will give him some food which is burnt from bottom. Right? So one fellow just engaged him in carrying the palanquin of a king called Rahugana. So because he was very compassionate to the ants, he was not walking properly. Right? He was walking slowly. That is creating some imbalance for the king. And king chastised him. Then Jadabharat gave a response to that chastisement that revealed his deep wisdom, like that. So Jadabharat did not speak till now, and now he started speaking because he got a proper candidate to hear. So Rahugana was an immature personality. He was able to understand the science of soul and other things. So now then only Jadabharat spoke some mature and intelligent words. So far he was behaving like a dumb man, hiding his knowledge. Then Rahugana came to his senses and then begged forgiveness from Jadabharat. And for 5 full chapters, Jadabharat gives beautiful teachings on mind and forest of material enjoyment to Rahugana. Rahugana was enlightened. Right? Then that is how. And after that, there are further descendants of Priyavrata. Right? One of the prominent kings is Gaya. So that is described till the 15th chapter. From the 16th chapter, the universe structure is described. So there is Jambudvipa. So actually, in the first chapter only, we have discussed that Priyavrata has created 7 ditches, 7 islands and 7 oceans in Bhumandala. So Parikshit Maharaj wanted to know what are the dimensions of all these oceans and all, right, about this Bhumandala. So he wanted Sukadev Goswami to describe this structure of Jambudvipa. So this Jambudvipa is like a whirl in the lotus flower, right? So in the middle of that Jambudvipa, so Jambudvipa is the middlemost dvipa. There are 7 islands. The middlemost island is Jambudvipa, right? We will see that more. So in the middle portion of this Jambudvipa, there is this Mount Sumeru. So 100,000 yojanas is the height of Mount Sumeru. So 84,000 was above ground level and 16,000 was below ground level. Right? And the width of this Jambudvipa is also 100,000 yojanas. Right? And this Jambudvipa was having 9 varshas. So the top varshas are Ramyaka Varsha, Hiranmaya Varsha and Kuru Varsha. Bottom varshas are Hari Varsha, Kimpurusha Varsha and Bharata Varsha. And this middle varsha is called Ilavrata Varsha. So in this Ilavrata Varsha, there is this orange circle is Mount Meru. Now we are seeing the top view. In the previous slide, we have seen the side view. So this is Ketumala Varsha and Bhadrasva Varsha. And there are many other smaller mountains around this Jambudvipa also. And Ilavrata Varsha is more elaborately discussed here. Around the Sumeru, there are so many other mountains. Right? There are different mountain ranges. And these 9 varshas are separated by different mountains, mountain ranges, all these are discussed and their dimensions are also discussed. And Ganga comes from causal ocean, right? And then it falls in this Dhruvaloka, 7 stars, and it falls on the top of Mount Meru. And it divides into 4 paths, right? And then merges in the sea. Right, this is one path. This is called Sita path. On top of Mount Meru, it goes to this eastern side of Ilavrata Varsha and then merges into the sea, salt water ocean. So like that there are four parts of Ganga. All these are described in the 16th chapter. And on top of Mount Meru, so this is the top view again. On the top of Mount Meru, there are pleasure abodes of these demigods. Middlemost is Brahma's abode called Manovati. And around surrounding this abode are these eight heavenly abodes. So these are not their permanent residences. Brahma has his Satyaloka. And Brahma has another residential place on top of Mount Sumeru also. Right? So, yeah, these are the paths of Ganga. Next, we have this predominating deities. In each of these varshas, varsha means a tract of land. So within Jambudvipa there are nine varshas. Each varshas have prominent residents and a predominating deity, which they worship. For example, in the Uttarakuru Varsha, Lord Boar is being worshipped. In Ilavrata Varsha, Lord Shiva is worshipping Lord Sankarshan. So like that. So one and a half, two chapters describe the beautiful prayers of all these residents of Jambudvipa. It's a wonderful section in the fifth canto. So next comes the overall structure of Bhumandala. The middlemost dvipa is Jambudvipa. Around that is saltwater ocean. So around that is Plakshadvipa. Around that is sugarcane juice ocean. Then comes Shalmali Dvipa. Then liquor ocean. Then Kushadvipa. Then clarified butter ocean. Then Kraunchadvipa, surrounded by milk ocean. Then Shakadvipa, surrounded by yogurt ocean. Then Pushkara Dvipa, surrounded by Pushkara Dvipa is actually having a mountain range called Manasottara Mountain. Right? So these are all the various other things. And Manasottara Mountain, the sun is revolving. Sun is traveling on that mountain. And there is uninhabited land. There is a golden land beyond that. Right? So beyond this this golden land is Lokaloka Mountain range. Right? That is called Aloka Varsha. That is like touching the border of the universe only. So this is the cross-sectional view, the top view of the Bhumandala, where there are seven islands and seven oceans, and there are different mountain ranges. Right? Next, this is the front view of the universe. So now we have seen the top view, Bhumandala structure. When you see the front view, you have the different planetary systems, 14 planetary systems. So this is the middle planetary system, which is Bhurloka. So above that is Bhuvarloka, that is 100,000 yojanas high. So Bhuvarloka, that above 100,000 yojanas is sun revolving in that orbit. Then all the then comes Svargaloka, which is like 3,800,000 yojanas high. Above that are Dhruvaloka, then Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapoloka, Satyaloka. Then below this are Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Patala, Bhuta, Patala Lokas, Rasatala Lokas. Right? And here, somewhere here, there is Pitruloka and hellish planets. Right? 26 hellish planets. 26 are prominent, there are more hellish planets. So this is the cross-sectional view of the universe. And the universe is covered by different layers of water, fire, air, ether, finally false ego. So this is the structure of the universe. All these are described. And there is Shishumara planet, and how Lord Ananta is there, and his expansion Sankarsana performs destruction. All these are described in the fifth canto, ending chapters. Then comes the description of 26 hellish planets. So after describing these hellish planets very graphically, so Parikshit Maharaj was astonished. So many hellish planets are there. How can people be delivered from these hellish conditions? People should not enter these hellish conditions. How can people be delivered from entering these hellish conditions? That was his question in the beginning of the sixth canto. So then comes the sixth canto themes. How Lord protects his people. Now we have seen that Lord has created so much of complicated structure of universe, creation, sub-creation and all this. It seems very complicated. But Lord gives a very easy way out of this creation. If you have seen that creation chart, the material world is there and the spiritual world is there. There is one connecting thing, Hare Krishna Mahamantra, that is connecting from this material world within this one universe, to Golokadham at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Right? So how can people be saved from entering hellish planets? By holy name. By keeping faith on sound vibration. Right? By taking shelter of Lord's protection aspect. That Poshana aspect is described in the sixth canto. Although some devotees do some mistakes once in a while, still Lord gives them protection. Right? Ajamila, Daksha, Indra, Chitraketu, Vritrasura, all these stories are discussed. Diti, all these people have done some mistakes. Still Lord protected them. That is the Poshana aspect of the Lord. So that is the theme of, prominent theme of the sixth canto. So when Parikshit Maharaj asked this question, to test the understanding of his disciple, Sukadeva Goswami gave this answer. By performing atonement in time, one will be saved from his hellish planets. Then Parikshit Maharaj said, what you are speaking? Atonement. Atonement may relieve one from sinful reaction for some time, but that will not remove the sinful proclivity in that person. It is like elephant bath, kunjara shauchavat. Right? So it is prayaschitam athopartam, manye kunjara shauchavat. So elephant will take nice bath under some waterfall or some lake, something, and then comes out and then put some dirt on it. What is the use of taking that kind of bath? Atonement is also like that. Right? So he rejects that answer. Then he says jnana process. There are different elements of jnana process, so you should follow this jnana process to be relieved from entering hellish conditions. Then Parikshit Maharaj was not happy with this answer. He did not even speak a single word, but his guru understood. Sukadeva Goswami understood. I think Parikshit is not happy with this answer. Actually, Sukadeva Goswami was happy that Parikshit Maharaj's understanding has become very refined. He was not accepting anything below Bhakti Yoga. So he himself described, actually, this jnana process is like Venu Gulmam Ivanala. Karmakanda process is Manye Kunjara Sochavat, and jnana process is Venu Gulmam Ivanala. Means, by the medium of a forest fire, Venu Gulmam, this bamboo trees are burnt, right? Burnt to ashes. But when some monsoon comes or when some favorable circumstances come, again they sprout up. Like that. That is the jnana process. So he rejected that also. Then he gives the final answer. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dhunvanti karsnena niharam eva bhaskara. So this niharam eva bhaskara, this analogy is given. When sun comes, there is no question of fog. Right? All fog is dissipated when sun comes. So bhakti kechit kevalaya bhaktya, by performing only bhakti towards Vasudeva, agham dhunvanti karsnena, completely all the sinful activities are washed away, just like fog is dissipated when sun appears. So bhakti is the solution for one not to enter these hellish planets. This is Sakran Manah Krishna Padaravindayor Niveshitam Tad Gunaragi Ayriha. Nate Yamam Pasha Bhutasya Tad Bhatan Swapnepi Pashyanti Hi Chirna Nishkritaha. Chirna Nishkritaha. Nishkrita means atonement. All these people have performed wonderful atonement. Completely all atonements are accomplished by taking shelter of Lord's holy name. Right? Sakran Manah Krishna Padaravindayor. Devotee accomplishes all atonements just by remembrance. So as a case study for this, that devotees, by taking shelter of the process of Bhakti Yoga, they need not see Yamadutas even in dream. Nate Yamam Pasha Bhritascha Tad Bhatan. They need not touch Yamapasha, they need not have the darshan of Yamadutas also even in dream. As a case study, Ajamila episode is described. So Ajamila is a sinful personality, right? Throughout his life he has performed so many sinful activities. But one good thing in him is, he named his son as Narayana. So, at the time of death, when Yamadutas were snatching away his soul, he called his son, Narayana, 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 he was calling. Because he called this four syllables, Narayana, four Vishnudutas came to protect him. Right? Then Yamadutas were snatching away his soul. So, there was a long conversation between Yamadutas and Vishnudutas about the course of punishment versus the power of holy name. So the Yamadutas were just speaking rules, protocols. Because he has done this sinful activities, he is meant for punishment by Yamaraj. I am taking him. Then Vishnu will say, because he has chanted holy name can relieve one from all sinful reactions. Right? He has chanted Narayana in a helpless condition. And he has not done any offenses also. To chant the holy name with an intention to nullify one's sinful activities, sinful reactions, that is an offense. And to commit sinful activities on the strength of the chanting of the holy name, that is also an offense. Achamil did not do both of the offenses. He did not do both. He was just chanting Narayana just to call his son. There is no other motivation in that. So that holy name is very powerful. So they gave a holy name seminar to Yamadutas. And they cut their Pasha, Yama Pasha. And also this holy name, this Yamadutas described the past history of Achamil also. How he was attracted by the illicit affair between a Sudra woman and Sudra man, and how he was illusioned, and how he gave up his chaste wife, and how he did all sinful activities, all that was described. But still, Vishnu Dutas defeated Yamadutas, because Vishnu Dutas are like military men. Yamadutas are like local constables. Right? Military men have more powers. Right? So they did not allow Ajamila's soul to be snatched away. Then Ajamila was released, and then he came back to senses. He performed a devotional service at Haridwar, and eventually he lamented also, he took resolutions also, and eventually Vishnu Dutas took him back to the Godhead, like that. Then Parikshit Maharaj asked another question. Now Yamaraj's attendants, Yamadutas, were defeated by Vishnu Dutas, and this never happened before. How did Yamaraj took it? Right? What was Yamaraj's reaction by knowing that his attendants were defeated like this? So then Parikshit Maharaj, and then Sukadeva Goswami describes that also. So all these Yamadutas go and report to Yamaraj. We thought you are the boss. There is a boss beyond you also. Even if there are multiple bosses, multiple authorities, there should be one common protocol. All of them should agree with one condition. Right now, this boss is saying something. We agree that in the universal management system, there are different hierarchies. Somebody is above, somebody is below. But all of them should agree to common protocols. Now, we are implementing your protocol, and someone else has come and then cut our ropes and then defeated us. Right? Right? Who are these effulgent personalities? Because Ajamil chanted Narayana, they have protected him. Then first, Yamaraj's first response was, he felt very happy. First time, Yamadutas took the holy name. Right? So far, he was only instructing all these Yamadutas, you put this fellow in that hell, you take this fellow in that hell, right? You put him in frying pan, right? Fry him in boiling oil, right? You cut his limbs, you put him in Sachimukha hell. So like that he was giving instruction to Yamadutas. First time he got an opportunity to speak Krishna Katha to Yamadutas. He felt very happy. So Yamaraj discussed the hierarchy and how the Supreme Lord is above him also, and how he is just acting as a servant of the Supreme Lord and acting under his instructions. And he also spoke about the Mahajans. Dharmam to sakshat bhagavat pranitam. And who are the knowers of dharma? 12 Mahajans. Right? So he spoke all that. And then he gave this. Whom to get, whom not to get. Te deva siddha parigita pavitra gatha ye sadhava samadrsho bhagavat prapannaha tanno pasitata harer gadayabhiguttan naisham vayam nachavayaha prabhavamadandi. One should not touch this devotees. Te deva siddha parigita pavitra gatha. Their pavitra gathas are sung by siddhas and great demigods also. Right? So, they are bhagavat prapanna. They are completely surrendered unto the Lord. So, tan nopa siddhata harer gadayabhiguptan. You should never approach them, because they are always being protected by Lord's gada. Kaumodaki is always protecting the devotees. Right? Naisham vayam nacha vayah prabhavama dandi. Even Brahma and the time and myself, the personification of death, we also have no influence over those devotees. Then whom to bring? Jihvana vakti bhagavad gunanam adheyam chetascana smaratita charanara vindam ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯನೋ ನಮತಿ ಯಚ್ಚಿರ ಏಕದಾಪಿ ತಾನಾನವಧ್ಯಮಸತಾಂ ಕೃತ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಕೃತ್ಯಾನ್ ಜಿಹ್ವಾ ನ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಭಗವದ್ ಗುಣನಾಮಧೇಯಂ ವಿತ್ ದೇರ್ ಟಂಗ್ ದೇ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ನಾಟ್ ಚಾಂಟೆಡ್ ದ ಹೋಲಿ ನೇಮ್ ಆಫ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇವನ್ ಒನ್ಸ್. ಬ್ರಿಂಗ್ ಸಚ್ ಫೆಲೋಸ್ ಟು ಮೀ. ದೆನ್ ಚೇತಸ್ಯನ ಸ್ಮರತಿ ತಚ್ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದಂ ವಿತ್ ದೇರ್ ಚೇತನ್ ವಿತ್ ದೇರ್ ಕಾನ್ಷಿಯಸ್ನೆಸ್ ದೇ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ನಾಟ್ ರಿಮೆಂಬರ್ಡ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇವನ್ ಒನ್ಸ್. ಬ್ರಿಂಗ್ ದೋಸ್ ಪೀಪಲ್ ಟು ಮೀ. ದೆನ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯನೋ ನಮತಿಯಶ್ಚಿರ ಏಕದಾಪಿ ದೇ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ನಾಟ್ ಆಫರ್ಡ್ ಒಬೇಸನ್ಸಸ್ ಟು ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇವನ್ ಒನ್ಸ್. ಸಚ್ ಪೀಪಲ್ ಆರ್ ಎಂಟೈಟಲ್ಡ್ ಫಾರ್ ಮೈ ಪನಿಷ್ಮೆಂಟ್. Means even if one has offered obeisances to Krishna once, even if he has remembered Krishna once, even if he has chanted Krishna's names or activities even once, Yamadutas cannot touch him. This is Yamaraj's instruction to Yamadutas. So that is how that beautiful episode of Ajamila ends. Then Parikshit Maharaj continues to ask questions about Visarga. Oh, I think we were discussing about Visarga and suddenly we got into universal structure because I asked you about how Priyavrat has created this ditches and all, and I also asked you about Ajamila, how people can be protected from hellish conditions. So there is a lot of detours. Then come, actually what is happening is Visarga description, right? So he wanted to ask, where did we leave? Fourth canto, last chapter, Pracheta's son is Daksha, right? Daksha was ruling. So now Visarga has to continue from Daksha. Priyavrata's descendants are already described. Uttanapada's descendants are already described. So the creation that happened from Daksha is not yet described. So he asked about creation from Visarga from Daksha. So Daksha actually, he was born from Prachetas again. He gave up that goat head body, and then he became the son of Prachetas and Marisha. And then he went to perform austerities. So he, as a part of his austerities, he did this Hamsa Guhya prayers. Hamsa Guhya prayers are some Upanishadic prayers, Vedic prayers. He offered to the Lord, and the Lord manifested in front of Daksha and then said, by the influence of my illusory energy, you and your progeny will create more progeny and populate this universe. Like that. Then Daksha created 10,000 Hariyashvas and said, order them, go and perform austerities. Then Narada Muni met all the 10,000 Hariyashvas and then gave him an allegorical story. You figure out, he gave 10 allegorical points. You figure out the meaning of it and then do the needful. Then all of them sat and contemplated, what did Narada Muni say? Then all of them came to the conclusion that Narada Muni is indicating that we should perform full-time devotional service. Then all of them became brahmacharis. All of them became sannyasis. So Daksha was completely upset. Then he created 1,000 more sons. They are called Shavalaswas. Then Narada Muni went to them and said, your brothers, 10,000 brothers, you know, followed this path. Now, ideally, younger brothers follow elder brothers. Now, you do the needful. Whatever you want, you can do. Then all these 1,000 people also became brahmacharis. Then Narada Muni's preaching was very powerful. Daksha was totally upset. Then Narada Muni thought, I have delivered Priyavrata and this Uttanapad. He spoke to Uttanapad also. He spoke to Dhruva also. He spoke to Prajanabarhi. He spoke to Prajetas. Then Hariyashvas, Chavalashvas. Narada Muni had the track record of diverting everyone to the path of liberation. Why should I leave Daksha? Let me go to Daksha also. So he went to Daksha. And when Daksha saw Narada Muni, he became extremely angry. Right? He criticized Narada Muni like anything. Sixth and the fifth chapter describes all that criticism. He blasphemed Narada Muni in various ways. You are asadhu. Just by changing the dress to saffron, you will not become a sadhu. Right? I am actually a sadhu. I am a proper grahavrata. I am following the rules of household life. And you are taking some immature boys and then diverting them immaturely to the path of renunciation, right? You are an asadhu, you are a bogus person, like that he blasphemes him. And then Narada Muni was waiting, patiently waiting. Why did Narada Muni wait in spite of Daksha chastising him so much? Because when somebody is very angry, if you allow him to exhibit his anger without subduing his anger, slowly his anger will subside and then he will come back to senses. He will regret, sorry, I became thoda gussa ho gaya, please sorry. So he may say like that. So Narada Muni was waiting for that moment so that he can give bhakti when Daksha comes down. But Daksha, because of the traces of offenses he has done to Shiva, they were so strong. So Daksha was not in a mood to, you know, hear or calm down at all from his anger on Narada Muni. So Narada Muni waited. He waited till Daksha cursed him. I curse you that you don't have residence. Because he was a Grihavrata, so he was thinking that he was attached to a house, living to the comforts of a house. He was thinking that if someone doesn't have a house, proper residence to stay, that is actually a curse on him. So he cursed Narada Muni and said that you will not have any residence. You will not be able to stay at one place. You will keep on moving here and there. That was a curse. But for Narada Muni, that was a blessing. So Narada Muni went. Then Brahmaji came to Daksha. What is your problem? You are creating sons and Narada Muni is making them into renunciants. So better you create daughters. Then Narada Muni will not come and touch them. So he created daughters. He suggested that Daksha creates daughters. Daksha created 60 daughters. And then he gave to different sages. And many of them married this sage called Kashyapa. So all of them gave birth to all these reptiles and birds and then animals and aquatics. So these are all the descendants of the daughters of Daksha. Universe needs all these creatures also, right? So these are the different descendants of Daksha. Daksha's daughters. So while describing the descendants of Daksha's daughters, so one daughter called Aditi was married to Kashyapa and then she gave birth to Tvashta. And that Tvashta married Rachana. You just take these highlighted boxes. You are able to see? Yeah, he red box you see. So that Tvashta married Rachana. This Rachana was actually daughter of Daityas. So their son was Sannivesha and Vishwarupa. And this Vishwarupa was accepted as guru by the demigods. Although he was the son of a Daitya mother, right? A Brahmana married Daitya, and their son is Vishwarupa. And that Vishwarupa, who was connected to Daityas from his mother's side, he was accepted as guru by all the demigods. Then that created doubt in Parikshit Maharaj. How come demigods rejected their guru, Brihaspati, and accepted Vishwarupa as the guru? That was his question. Then Sukadeva Goswami describes this incident. Once Indra was sitting in his royal assembly, palace, and Indra Sabha, then Brihaspati entered that palace. Then Indra did not do anything to respect him. Indra was thinking that daily this Brihaspati is coming. Today also he came. Right? There is no need to receive him or welcome him very extraordinarily. So he will come and sit. So he was just thinking like that. He did not do anything to receive his guru. So that is familiarity breeds contempt. So Brihaspati was upset. So he just left. Silently he left. Then immediately Indra realized his mistake. Hey, I did not welcome my guru. Right? Then he searched for his guru everywhere. But Brihaspati was not to be seen. He made himself in such a way that Indra cannot see him. Then he was regretting. Indra regretted a lot. I have offended my guru. I have disrespected my guru. I did not welcome him. So because of this offense towards their guru, the potency of demigods came down. Then demigods were defeated by the demons. Demons attacked the demigods and then they were defeated. Then all the demigods went to Brahmaji. Then Brahmaji said, you have offended your guru. A great exalted personality, Brihaspati. So this is what you have to undergo. So currently he chastised them sufficiently and then said, currently you accept Vishwarupa as your guru and he will give you a means so that you can regain your opulence. Then all the demigods were to go to Vishwarupa. So this Vishwarupa got this knowledge of Narayana Kavacha. So Narayana Kavacha means it's a hymn, right? It's a hymn that invokes the protection of various incarnations of the Lord, various weapons of the Lord. So he gave that Narayana Kavacha. He employed that Narayana Kavacha for the protection of this Indra and reinstated Indra in his position as the king of heavenly planets. But this Vishwarupa, because he was connected to demons also from his mother's side, so he was secretly offering oblations to the demons also. Vishwarupa had three heads. So Indra noticed it. And actually Brahmaji told, if you tolerate Vishwarupa's inclination towards the demons, you will get your opulence back. But Indra became very intolerable, very insecure. He felt that, oh, this Vishwarupa is chanting hymns and offering oblations on the name of demons also, because he was connected from his mother's side to the demons. Now demons will become powerful. Indra could not tolerate that. Indra took his sword and then beheaded Vishwarupa. He offended his another guru. First he offended his first guru, Brihaspati, by not welcoming him. Now he has offended his second guru, right, called Vishwarupa, by killing him. So Vishwarupa's father, who is Tvashta, he became very angry with Indra. Right, Indra, how dare you kill my son Vishwarupa? Right, he is the one who gave you your position back. So this Tvashta made a big sacrifice. Right, it's already 6 o'clock. So may I go just 5-10 minutes more to complete the sixth canto? So Indra killed Vishwarupa, and then Tvashta conducted a sacrifice to create a demon who can kill Indra. But there was a mispronunciation on the part of Tvashta. So Tvashta was chanting mantra, Indra Shatroho, like that. So instead of creating a demon who can kill Indra, he created a demon who will be killed by Indra because of his mispronunciation. So from that sacrifice, this Vritrasura came. See how huge he is. Where are the Brahmanas here? They may be 1 centimeter tall, and this person is like occupying the whole screen. So Vritrasura came from that sacrifice. Right? He was such a huge body, and then he was practically touching the clouds. And then as soon as he took birth, to kill the offender, to kill the person who killed his brother. Actually, Vritrasura was created by Tvashta. Means Tvashta is the father of Vritrasura. And Tvashta's son is Vishwarupa. Vishwarupa happens to be the brother of Vritrasura. So this Indra has killed my brother, I have to kill him. That was his mission. So he went to attack the demigods. And all the demigods tried to attack him, but Vritrasura, such a huge personality, he swallowed all their weapons. Right? So then demigods went and took shelter of the Lord. Then Lord told, you should go to Dadichi Muni and request for his bones. Right, from his bones, you make a thunderbolt. And with that thunderbolt, you will be able to kill Vritrasura. And demigods offered so many prayers also. And Lord comes and then says, you have offered such beautiful prayers, but is this the result of these prayers? Is this what you want? You are offering such devotional prayers with an intention to, you know, protect yourself from the demon. Right? The purpose of your prayers, Lord did not appreciate much. But however, he just gave his solution, right? So all the demigods went to Dadichi. And Dadichi said, "Your body is so dear to persons. How can someone give up one's body, right, for others?" So he was like having a very jovial conversation with the demigods, demigods can speak some religious principles, and then Dadichi can hear it. Then when demigods requested him, Dadichi very happily agreed to give up his life. Right? Lord Vishnu told that a thunderbolt has to be made from my body. I am happy to give up my body for it. So he gave up his body, and from his bones, Vishwakarma has made one thunderbolt. Then Indra took that thunderbolt and then went to attack this Vritrasura. And there was a big fight between demigods and the demons. Then at one point, Vritrasura was very powerful, so he was attacking the demigods and the demons. Then demigods had that rejuvenated spirits after getting that vajra from Dadichi. They were attacking demons like anything, and the demons were very fearful of the prowess of demigods, and then they ran away. Then seeing that demigods on his side were running away, Dhritarasura chastised them. And then he personally attacked the demigods. And the demigods also became fearful and then they started running away. Then Dhritarasura chastised them also. Right? So he uses very heavy words to chastise both of them. Then Dhritarasura started chastising Indra. Because in the middle of that fight, Indra threw his gada. And Dhritarasura took that with his left hand and then made it useless. You see, in his hand, there is one small gada, which is as big as his one finger. Right? That was thrown by actually Indra. And Dhritarasura slapped Airavat. Airavat went back, right, some 14 yards or whatever. And then it lost his consciousness or something like that. And Indra, because he drank nectar, he revived Airavat and then he came back. And now he was hesitant to throw his thunderbolt. Right? So he needed counseling on the battlefield. Right? He was hesitant to throw his thunderbolt. And why? Because I have employed my most powerful gada to kill this fellow, Dhritarasura, and he rendered it very useless. And if I throw my thunderbolt also, he will make it useless. And I will have no weapon to play with, to fight with. He was feeling insecure. Although that thunderbolt is imbued with the devotional austerities done by Dadichi Muni, and Lord personally predicted that if you employ this gada, this thunderbolt, you will be able to kill Dhritarasura, still Indra could not have faith on those instructions of the Lord. He was hesitant. He was feeling insecure on the battlefield. Then Dhritarasura chastised Indra. Right? You have killed my brother, like that he chastised, and then started, in spite of my chastisement, this fellow is not getting inspired to fight with me. He was still fearful only. So let me give him counseling in another way. Right? Then he said, throw that thunderbolt on me. He directly told. Right? The thunderbolt was ordained to kill me. Right? You should throw that thunderbolt. So see, it's like playing only, playing some chess or something like that. Battlefield is like that. You should depend on the Lord's will only. So you should throw the thunderbolt, you should not be attached to success or failure. Like that he was giving so much of good instructions to Dhritarasura, to Indra. And then he offered this beautiful prayers to Dhritarasura, exemplary prayers. This is also considered by Chatushloki. So after you kill me also, I am not desiring any exalted position in the three worlds. Nanayaka prushtam, nacha parameshtyam, nasarvabhomam, narasadhipatyam. So what I desire to attain is a position of being dasanudas. Dasanudaso bhavitasmi bhuyah. So on the battlefield also, Dhritarasura was yearning for direct service to the Lord. He was aspiring for friendship with devotees. He was aspiring for detachment from the spell of Maya. Right? He was aspiring for pure devotional service to the Lord, a reunion with Lord Sankarsan, his favorite deity. So seeing this, Indra got little surprised. Is he a demon or what? A pure devotee. How come I am battling with him? I am supposed to be a devotee, being on the side of demigods. And this demon is giving me Bhagavatam class on the battlefield. So he was also surprised and then he was impressed by the devotional service of Dhritarasura. And then finally, he threw his thunderbolt. And then first he cut his hand, right, one hand, and then he cut his second hand also, Dhritarasura's second hand also. Now Dhritarasura doesn't have anything to play, doesn't have anything to fight with. He has only one mouth. He swallowed Indra. Right? So that, because now no demigod was obviously on the side of Dhritarasura. No demon was on the side of Dhritarasura. They fled away from the battlefield. And all the sages and rishis and so many other people, they were performing sacrifices so that Dhritarasura can be killed. He is creating a lot of disturbance. So not a single personality in the entire cosmic manifestation is on the side of Dhritarasura. And even if Dhritarasura wins this battle also, who is on his side? How will he enjoy? With whom will he share this victory with? But Dhritarasura was duty bound and he was fighting on the battle because Dhritarasura's only ecstasy in his life was to be killed by the thunderbolt of Indra. Because Lord told him, The only purpose of Ritrasura's living is to be killed by that thunderbolt. That was the service given to him by the Lord. Lord ordained this thunderbolt will kill Ritrasura, and then he was just following that. And he was very happy that his guru Narada Muni was satisfied with him, and his Lord Sankarsana was satisfied with him. So he was inspiring Indra in various ways to fight. So finally, because he was till last moment he has to fight, right? So he swallowed Indra, and now he has no one to fight with, and he went into meditative trance. He was meditating on Lord Sankarsana. So Indra took 1 year to come out of the body of Ritrasura and then behead Ritrasura's thing. Actually, Ritrasura was absorbed in his meditation, and Indra for 1 year he was just cutting his throat, right? So with his thunderbolt. So after 1 year passed, so Indra went and feeling that Krishna, I have killed Ritrasura. But actually, Indra was very morose after this whole battle, because Indra was actually, after hearing the devotional prayers of Ritrasura, Indra was hesitant to kill Ritrasura. But sages encouraged him. I have already killed one Brahmana, offended another Brahmana. Now Ritrasura is also a Brahmana only. He was son of Tvashta, right? If I kill him, how will I be saved from sinful reactions? So all the sages came and encouraged Indra. Indra, you kill him. After you kill him, we will perform some yajna and relieve you of all the sinful reactions. That is like an offense to the holy name. Right? So being encouraged by the sages, and also his personal ambition to become the king of heavenly planets once again, so Indra killed. But he was remorseful. So the sinful reaction of offending so many Brahmanas took the form of a old woman affected by tuberculosis and chased Indra. So Indra was running away. So Indra ran and went to Manasa Sarovar, and then went inside that lake and then hid himself within the stem of a lotus. Right? He was hiding there for a long time, maybe 100 years or something like that. And whenever people do some sacrifices, they have oblations for different demigods. And Agnidev, see, he comes and delivers all these oblations to different demigods. So, because this Indra was staying inside the waters, Agni could not enter the water and give his oblations also. Indra was getting emaciated. Actually, Agni has the ability to enter waters and give oblations, because Varuna was there in the water. To give oblations to Varuna Dev, fire god has to enter the water, right? He can give, he has the ability. But what stopped Varuna is actually Indra's sinful reactions. Indra's sinful reactions were so powerful that he could not even receive the oblations of sacrifices which are meant for him from Varuna Dev also. So Indra was suffering like that. So slowly he came back out of that after experiencing that punishment for a long time. So he came out and then he was reinstated as the king of heavenly planets. So meanwhile, when Indra was like this, Nahusha was ruling, right? So Nahusha, he was offending Sachi Devi, because he took Indra's post and he wanted Indra's consort also. Then she told him, so you come on the palanquin carried by the sages, then I will accept you as my husband or whatever. Then he was cursed by the sages to become a python, and that was his story. That comes again in the 9th canto also. So now Parikshit Maharaj has one question. After this, concluding this Indra episode and Ritrasura episode, Parikshit had a big question. Demons are very passionate. They are filled with qualities of ignorance and passion. Right? And Ritrasura, who is supposed to be a demon, that too on the battlefield, already demons are passionate and ignorant. And on the battlefield, their passion is so high. And on the battlefield, this demon Ritrasura, he is offering such exemplary devotional prayers. Right? So he gives this beautiful chart. Chart means like his bifurcation. There are so many human beings amongst the jivas. They are like atoms. Jivas are like atoms. And human beings are limited amongst those jivas. And out of them, those who are interested to follow religious principles, karmis, They are very rare. Out of them also, those who have desire for liberation from material world, they are even rare. Mumukshuva, jnanis, they are very rare. And even amongst them, those who are actually liberated, Muchyeta, they are even more rare. And even amongst them, those who have understood the true meaning of liberation, they are even more rare. And rarer than them are devotees of Narayana. So devotee of a Narayana, Muktanam api Siddhanam Narayana Parayanaha, Sudurlabho Prashantatma Kotishvapi Mahamuni. So devotee is extremely rare. Now Vritrasura seems to be belonging to that rare category. That middle red circle is the category of Vritrasura. Right, not this blue box or lot of orange circle or anything like that. He seems to be belonging to that category. But apparently he's a demon filled with passion and ignorance. How come Vritrasura exhibits such great devotional tendencies even on the battlefield? That was Parikshit Maharaj's question. Then Sukadeva Goswami started describing. Actually, there is one king called Chitraketu. So this Chitraketu had 1 crore wives. First he married one wife and they did not have a child. He married second wife. Then also they did not have a child. Third wife, 100th wife, 1000th wife, right? 1 lakh wife, then 1 crore wife, still he did not have a child. So he was very morose. So one day Angira Muni came to his kingdom and then said, Angira Muni asked, "Are you happy?" Then Vritrasura, Chitraketu revealed his unhappiness. "Because I don't have a son, I am not very happy." Actually, Vritrasura's desire was not bad also, because for a king, it's a responsibility to have an able son for the future administration. So it was not wrong on the part of Vritrasura also to desire for a son. But he was so Chitraketu. But he was so obsessed with this desire that nothing could give him satisfaction. So Angira Muni said, "I will perform a sacrifice and then give you a son." He did sacrifice. And then before going, Angira Muni said, "This son would be the cause of your happiness and distress. He is called Harsha Soka." Then Chitraketu was thinking that, he will be a disobedient son. That's why he may cause some distress to me. Or he will be more qualified than me. In that way, he may be causing some distress to me. But it's okay. That distress is tolerable than having the distress of no son. Right? So he could not understand the instruction of Angira Muni. So Chitraketu was taking care of the child very affectionately. So one queen, the prominent queen, Kritadyuti, he gave birth to the child. So Chitraketu's affection for that queen increased a lot. So he eventually neglected other wives. Other wives became very envious of this wife, this Kritadyuti. Actually, it is Chitraketu's mistake also not to take proper care of the remaining 1 crore minus one wives. Right? So he was giving more time and affection towards this Kritadyuti only. And all the wives conspired and then felt that this child is the cause of the king's neglect towards us. Let's poison this child and then kill this child. So they killed the child. They poisoned the child. Kritadyuti realized that this child was poisoned. Then they were lamenting. Chitraketu was lamenting. Kritadyuti were lamenting. Kritadyuti was even blaspheming the Supreme Lord also. Then at that point, Narada Muni and Angira Rishi came. Narada Muni, by his mystic power, brought this dead son alive and then said, "See, all your family members are crying. Your parents are crying." Then that boy said, "Which parents? I have undergone several births, cat birth, dog birth, animal birth, bird birth, human birth. I had so many parents. In which birth are these my parents?" So like that, Narada Muni made this boy only to speak the science of soul and then transmigration and enlightened Chitraketu. Then he went back. Then all of them came back to their senses, and all these other wives who were envious, they came back to their senses. They also felt regret. Then Narada Muni gave a mantra to Chitraketu, which enabled him to have the darshan of Lord Sankarshan in 7 days. Then Chitraketu offered beautiful prayers to Sankarshan. So one day Chitraketu was made the king of Vidyadhara planet. So he was traveling in an airplane with all the Vidyadhara ladies, right? And he was enjoying there. What is his enjoyment? He was glorifying Krishna. So with all these Vidyadhara women, he was glorifying Krishna and then enjoying like that and then traveling everywhere. So once he came to a place where Shiva was sitting with, in the midst of so many sages, with Parvati Devi sitting on his lap. Then Chitraketu saw and laughed at Shiva and then gave a feedback to Shiva. Shiva, you are sitting with your consort, sitting on your lap in the midst of assembly of sages. By seeing this, you will not be affected by this kind of behavior. But by seeing you like this, a common man might misunderstand you. You are very exalted. Chitraketu glorifies Shiva like in various ways. You are very exalted, but a common man might misunderstand you. He expressed his concern. He was not very critical also, but one, he has a very slight tinge of pride. Although Shiva is a very exalted and topmost Vaishnava, Chitraketu felt that I am also a devotee. I can give a feedback to Shiva also. So he felt like that. That was a tinge of pride. So Lord Sankarshan was feeling so much separation from his dear devotee Chitraketu. And he wanted to purify this slight tinge of pride also within Chitraketu. And then he orchestrated this whole incident that Chitraketu gives a feedback to Shiva. And then Parvati gets upset. Then how dare you are giving us teachings? Are you the right personality to correct shameless persons like us? Right? So Brahmaji, then Narada Muni and so many other exalted personalities are there. They never told like that. And you are taking action in your hands and then you are correcting us. My dear son, become a demon. So she cursed him to become a demon. And then Chitraketu got down from the airplane, offered obeisances to Mother Parvati and then said, my mother, I never meant anything negative in my speech. But I never meant anything wrong or offensive. But whatever you think is wrong, may that be wrong and may I be forgiven for that. Right? So he said like that. He begged forgiveness and he never wanted a nullification of the curse. Whatever comes, guna pravaha yetasmin, kashyapa, konvanugraha. This is all in the material world, there is only current of modes only. What is happiness, what is distress? What is curse, what is blessing? Right? So he accepted the curse. He called Mother Parvati as mother also and then he went back. And he became a demon. Then Parvati, after that, Shiva gives a session to Parvati about the glories of devotees. You see, this Chitraketu, although you cursed him, although sir, that's a very heavy punishment for a small feedback that he has given, still he called you mother. He never wanted the nullification of curse. So this is the glory of devotees. Narayana parasarve nakutaschana vibhyati swarga apavarga narakeshu api tulyartha darshinah. So devotees are very glorious and they are not afraid of going into hellish conditions also because they are always absorbed in Narayana. So like that he glorifies devotees and then Shiva and then Parvati becomes a little shameful and covers her face with that cloth. And then this Chitraketu became a demon. That is Vritrasura. That was the background. So that is the 17th chapter of 6th canto. There are two more chapters. We'll take 2 minutes to complete. So now continuing the descendants. Where are we? We are actually discussing the descendants of the daughters of Daksha. Right? In the 6th chapter, when Sukadeva Goswami was describing the descendants of daughters of Aditi, suddenly this Tvashta story came. Then Vishwarupa, Indra. Then the detour went. And then Vritrasura story came. Then Chitraketu story came. Then again he is coming back to the descendants of Diti. So Kashyapa married Diti and then Diti had 49 Maruts sons. Right? So they are called Maruts. Although they are sons of Diti, they are supposed to be Daityas, still Indra accepted them as demigods. Then Parikshit Maharaj asks question, how come these Maruts are accepted as demigods by Indra? Although they are sons of Diti, then he gives the backstory. Actually, because of Indra only, Diti's sons were killed, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakasipu, etc. So Diti was very morose. She felt very envious of Indra. She served Kashyap Muni very nicely, and at the end Kashyap Muni was very pleased with her services and said, "What do you want? I am very pleased with you." Then Diti said, "I want a son who can kill Indra. Because of Lord Vishnu's inclination towards Indra, Vishnu killed my sons. Now I want another son who can kill Indra." Then Kashyap Muni said, "Oh my God, what happened? What did I do? So she tricked me. So now I will trick her by engaging her in devotional service." So then he gave a beautiful vrata called Pumsavana Vav. So you perform devotional service to Lord Vishnu, you perform this vrata, then you will be able to get a son who can kill Indra. But if there is a discrepancy in your execution of vrata, then you will not get a son. Right? Then you will get a son who will be killed by Indra. Something like that he says. Then Indra came to know about this. That Diti was performing this Pumsavana sacrifice, Pumsavana vow. Then Indra disguised himself and then came to Diti and said, "Mother, I will assist you in your vrata." Then Diti said, "Okay, come, assist me." So in the name of assistance, Indra was only looking forward for an opportunity where Diti might deviate from the standards of this vrata, and because of that mistake, she will not get a son who can kill him. And Indra can enter the womb of Diti and then kill her embryo. So like that, one day Diti deviated slightly, she slept or something like that. Then Indra entered her womb and then cut her embryo into 7 pieces. Then they became 7 children and then said, "Why are you killing us?" Then he cut the embryo into each of those 7 parts into 7 more. Like that they became 49. 7 is 49. So there were 40 children. Then this Diti was sleeping and then she got up. Then she suddenly saw 49 children. And she saw Indra also. Then she was bewildered. Right? My assistant is Indra. And I was desiring for one son. How are these 49 sons came into picture? Then Indra, without any cheating, he reveals all the incidents. "Mother, actually, I was trying to kill your embryo, and because of Lord's mercy, these 49 sons came." Then basically the message here is, because of devotional service performed by Diti, there is a transformation in her heart. She eventually gave up her envious feelings towards Indra. And Indra also gave up his envy towards Diti, and then he accepted these 49 kids as Maruts, as demigods. Like that. That's how that story ended. So this is the end of the 6th canto. So now, even after this 6th canto, Diti got this doubt. Diti was performing this Pumsavana vow because her sons were killed by Indra, killed by the Lord because of Indra. Then Parikshit Maharaj gets a doubt. How come the Lord took the side of the demigods and killed the demons? That shows a partiality on the part of the Lord. Then it is not partiality, and then the 7th canto begins. And how Lord is not partial, Lord is not impartial, he is reciprocal. And all these facts are described in the 7th canto. Nitharashtimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.